Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This week, we're talking about evidence. Fingerprints, Ring doorbell camera footage, witness testimony, DNA, all those clues that eventually lead investigators to perpetrators, and alleged perpetrators, of crimes. Finding the evidence and using it to piece together how crimes were committed is complicated in and of itself. Things get even more complicated in the courtroom, where prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, and juries pore over the evidence. And administrative issues like DNA testing backlogs can snarl the process. In this episode, we'll cover several cases where we can see how evidence, or a lack of evidence, has played a role in the search for justice. We'll also focus on one type of evidence in particular, DNA evidence, and efforts to improve how it's collected and how it's tested. Our first story begins on Thanksgiving Day 15 years ago. That's when three boys, 9-year-old Alexander, 7-year-old Andrew, and 5-year-old Tanner Skelton, disappeared. They were visiting their father, John Skelton. The next day, he went to a hospital and told workers there that he'd injured his ankle while trying to commit suicide. When police went to Skelton's home, they found it destroyed, but there was no evidence of the boys. Their bodies have never been found. Skelton was arraigned just last week on 3 counts of murder, more than a decade after the disappearance. WWJ's Amanda Forrester spoke with journalist Lynn Thompson about the evidence in the case and why the murder charges are coming now.
Back then, I was a newspaper reporter for the Bryan Times, local daily newspaper in Williams County, Ohio. Actually, it was the first day of deer season. I was out in the woods interviewing guys before they went out. And then, I got a call. This thing happened. Volunteers were searching. So I just tagged along and started covering it from that day onward.
Is there anything that, like any evidence that you think the prosecution may have that would lead to them filing these charges now versus previously when he was charged with unlawful imprisonment?
I have no idea what the prosecution team has. I never wanted to interfere with the case of the investigation. I always just wanted to cover what was going on. So I don't know what they have. My best guess is that this was their long-term strategy all along. Like if they can't get the I don't know if you want to call it the smoking gun, if they can't get the exact, you know, motive, weapon, location. Taking the plea bargain 15 years ago, just give them 15 years of time to compile all the other evidence, whether it's circumstantial or I don't think there were ever any eyewitnesses. I never heard anybody talk about them. So without that, they, you know, they got to build this thing literally from thin air. So the more time they have while he's in custody to do that, the better it is for the case. So, my opinion, I don't think anything earth shattering came up. I think they've just been doing diligence and compiling as they go literally every day for the last 15 years.
Yeah. Just looking at social media posts, once the news came out that he was being released, people seemed to have very strong opinions.
Yeah.
15 years later, why do you think that a case like this does resonate with people so much longer than cases that may be similar, but have kind of left the public consciousness much sooner than this case of the three missing boys?
I think a lot of it is just where they're from. Like Morenci, Michigan, small town. I think it has maybe two or three stoplights. You know, everybody knows everybody. When I was a kid, my family reunions were up there in the park. So, yeah, that kind of small town connection, all the kids went to school together. Nobody there is going to let this go until it's solved, I can tell you that. And then everybody else around it just hits home because those three small kids. I mean, I have two boys, and they're about the same age. So, yeah, it got like really emotionally intense really fast as soon as it happened. I mean, not to plug my book, but I went over like all the different investigation factors from sonar to canines, cadaver dogs, every kind of tool they were using at the time, and then, you know, what its limitations were and how it was employed. So all kinds of factors went into this thing in the first year, and I think investigators have just expanded on that over time. And again, it's about building the cumulative case, you know, and make sure the charges stick if they can actually prove he did this, which I think everybody thinks he did it from the get-go. I mean, a month after the search, the local police chief came out and said it was a homicide investigation. So nobody's surprised at this turn of events, but now it's just a matter of how do they prove it with whatever information's available. And I think tampering is a large part of that. Then what I wrote about was how Skelton intentionally concealed his movements, concealed what he did. I mean, as long as he controls the fate of his sons, he's still winning. He still has his personal victory. So I don't think he'll ever talk, and I don't think he'll ever reveal anything. It's just a matter of how do police actually prove what happened with whatever evidence and information is available.
Odyssey Station KYW in Philadelphia also recently reported on two cases that demonstrate how DNA evidence can come into play. Here's the first example, which shows how this evidence can impact cases even years after crimes are committed.
A man currently living in India is being sought by authorities in Burlington County. They have charged him with the 2017 murder of a mother and her young son in Maple Shade. Details now from KYW South Jersey reporter Mike Doherty.
Investigators at the Burlington County Prosecutor's Office say Nazir Hamid had been stalking his coworker for weeks before eventually killing his coworker's wife, Sasikala Nara, and their 6-year-old son, Anish. Detective Lieutenant Brian Cunningham says a droplet of blood found at the scene eventually came back as a match to Hamid after his employer, Cognizant, sent his company laptop to the New Jersey State Police so investigators could build a DNA profile of the man who had been a person of interest in this case for years.
Our work continues every day until Nazir Hamid is brought back to the United States and convicted for these horrible crimes.
While the U.S. and India do share an extradition treaty, Hamid remains at large in India, and officials here urge both governments to prioritize his arrest so justice can be served.
In the second Philly case example, there were recent jury deliberations regarding the shooting death of Police Sergeant Richard Mendez.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here, wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Here's a report on this case from last Friday.
In the third day of deliberations in the trial of two men accused of shooting to death Philadelphia Police Sergeant Richard Mendez at the airport 2 years ago, another upheaval in the jury room late this afternoon. The courtroom is suddenly cleared without explanation, and the judge denies objections from KYW and other news organizations. It's only afterward we find out a second juror is dismissed. So the reconstituted jury returns to deliberating, but just after 5:30 this evening. There was no verdict, and they'll return on Monday. More on what's happening at the Criminal Justice Center from KYW's Nigel Thompson.
After nearly a whole day of jury deliberations in the trial of 20-year-old Yobrani Martinez Fernandez and 23-year-old Hendrick Pena Fernandez, Judge Giovanni Campbell cleared the courtroom at the Justice Juanita Kidd Stout Criminal Justice Center. When reporters and the public were allowed back in, no initial explanation was given for why it was cleared, but another juror had been replaced. It's the second in 3 days of deliberations. The first was excused for a medical emergency. They're deciding whether Yobrani and Hendrick are guilty of murder, attempted murder, robbery, and a host of other charges in connection with the killing of Philadelphia Police Sergeant Richard Mendez and the wounding of fellow officer Raul Ortiz on the night of October 12, 2023. Mendez and Ortiz were responding to a robbery in a parking garage at Philadelphia International Airport when gunfire rang out. Yobrani and Hendrick were allegedly part of the crew both officers found trying to steal a car. Another man, Jesus Medina Duran, was also shot and killed that night and was also alleged to be part of the crew. A fourth, Alexander Batista Polanco, has already pleaded guilty to a lesser charge in connection with Mendez's killing and is testimony was a big part of the case against Yobrani and Hendrick. Their defense tried to poke holes in the prosecution throughout, which presented evidence that placed Yobrani and Hendrick at the scene at the time of the shooting. Should both be found guilty, they face the potential of life in prison. The jury reconvenes Monday morning.
And here's KYW's update from this Monday on the conviction.
The two men accused of killing Philadelphia Police Sergeant Richard Mendez have both been convicted of murder and will spend the rest of their lives in prison. Here's KYW Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson outside the Criminal Justice Center.
Yobrani Martinez Fernandez and Hendrick Pena Fernandez were quiet as they heard they were guilty of killing Sergeant Richard Mendez as he interrupted a car theft in an airport parking garage in October of 2023. Yobrani, the alleged shooter, of first-degree murder, Hendrick of second-degree.
For him to have been taken that way is just, I still can't comprehend.
Mendez's widow, Alex Carrera, says he was, as he has always been, the one who carried them through this more than two-week-long case.
Kept hearing my husband saying, "We got this," in my head.
A phrase she told the judge during the life sentencing hearing that her husband would often say through their three decades long relationship.
My husband was an amazing human being.
Prosecutor Sidney Pope weaved together cell phone data, social media, DNA, some surveillance, and eyewitness accounts as to what happened, and then waited for days for a verdict.
The other co-defendant, Alexander Batista Polanco, pleaded guilty earlier this month to third degree and will be sentenced at a later date.
Last week, KYW also reported on efforts to expand Pennsylvania's DNA index system.
Lawmakers in Harrisburg debating a bill that would expand Pennsylvania's DNA index system. Supporters say it could help solve crimes and reduce wrongful convictions. But opponents argue it's an invasion of privacy and unconstitutional. More from KWW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Elward.
The State House Judiciary Committee hearing focused on a bill from Bucks County State Senator Frank Ferry that would require, similar to fingerprinting, a cheek swab of anyone arrested for serious violent or sexual crimes, along with lesser crimes, including public exposure, theft, false imprisonment, and simple assault. John Roman with the University of Chicago's Center on Public Safety and Justice says, similar to fingerprints, it would greatly expand law enforcement's ability to solve crimes.
Available evidence supports expanding eligibility criteria for inclusion in CODIS to improve public safety, reduce disparities, and facilitate more just outcomes.
Roman says DNA collection is more reliable than fingerprint and eyewitness evidence, removing bias and potentially flagging false arrests earlier in the process. But the ACLU's Elizabeth Randolph says even though a narrow 2013 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court allowed DNA collection on arrest, it doesn't mean Pennsylvania should do it.
Authorizing law enforcement to accumulate genetic data from people without a warrant flies in the face of our most foundational constitutional principles.
Ferry's bill advanced out of committee last month and still needs to pass the Senate before it gets to the House.
Now, if we head south to New Orleans, Louisiana, there's a major DNA testing backlog. According to Odyssey Station WWL, this backlog is having an impact in homicide prosecutions. District Attorney Jason Williams and Matt Derbis, Homicide Unit Chief for the District Attorney's Office, joined WWL's Tommy Tucker to discuss the issue this week.
But what are the biggest challenges you guys face now?
Here's Jason Williams.
I mean, there are many. First and foremost, we have shifted to be in line with the federal government and the rest of the country in terms of requiring 12 out of 12 jurors to agree. And as we were talking about off air time, it's hard to get Americans to agree on anything, even the dressing of the turkey these days.
Really.
So that increases things. But, jurors are more sophisticated than they've ever been. A lot of them have that same technology that we use, whether it's Ring doorbell, security cams. They look for those things in terms of packages, right? So if they can rely on something for as simple as if a package was delivered, they expect to see some sort of digital forensics in almost every single case. And then you layer DNA on top of that. Jurors are looking for the types of evidence that they know exist in the world today.
And I guess CSI and programs like that have made it even harder.
Absolutely. We cannot lift a we can't see a fingerprint on a license plate when it's speeding from a crime scene the same way they can on Channel 7.
And here's Matt Derbis.
Yeah, I do think that jurors are much smarter and have a higher expectation level for what they expect to see in a trial. If you went back 20 years, 25 years, a lot of those murder cases may have had a single eyewitness, and that was it. And the case would involve a detective coming into court and saying this is what they did. And then in terms of identifying the person who committed the murder, they were really relying on a witness or witnesses to come into court and say, look, that's the person I saw kill the other person. And the problem we have with that is that we've seen over the last three or four decades is that the reliability of eyewitness identification has really been called into question with some of these exonerations and mis-IDs. And so, the more and more the jurors see television shows like CSI, and more importantly, the more Netflix specials or documentaries about someone who has been exonerated based on a mis-ID or based on a lack of evidence. And so everyone knows what evidence is out there. They know DNA exists. If you test it, you have it. They know that there's cell phone evidence. There's digital forensics. There's cameras. And so jurors are very hesitant to convict today based on a single eyewitness coming into court and saying that's the person.
We're going to get to DNA in a second because that's why you guys are here. But I got to ask personally, I'll watch shows, and sometimes I think, well, you couldn't get away with that because there's cameras everywhere. You couldn't get away with that because there's cameras everywhere. Are there pretty much cameras everywhere or not?
Not yet. You look at certain places like London, where CCTV has been around for over a decade.
I was in Ireland and saw, I don't know if I recounted that story to you or not, but where they actually proactively watched the video. They saw a woman leave a pub that was intoxicated going into an area where it was not a good area for her to be with a couple of guys hanging around and actually dispatched a unit. It would be nice to have the resources to have all of that, but we're a long way from that.
I mean, you just had Councilman Green on talking about the budget crisis, so we are even further away from that than we thought we could be years ago. But in the UK, that camera technology can also be preventative and proactive. But it also, you will find detectives actually doing a lot of work from behind monitors, mm-hmm. going back, retracing steps before they even get into the field. It's a game changer. In our situation, it's a patchwork. Sometimes it might be someone's Ring doorbell camera. It might be a license plate reader. It might be a social media post. We've got to string all those things together, and sometimes it might be the back of a person's head. But the game has changed as it relates to camera technology being helpful. Because jurors, one witness sometimes just isn't enough.
If they're willing.
If they're even willing to come. Yeah. That's a very good point, Tommy. And that's been something we've struggled with for a number of years, is people, because of rates of crime, not being willing to come to court and testify, even though they saw something. The first case we tried, we had 25 people out there at the scene, Christmas morning. Mm-hmm. First case Matt and I tried together, and the only person that came was a person we had to bring in shackles who was in jail for an unrelated issue.
And even then, you can't make them testify as to what they saw.
Plead the fifth.
Right. No, and that's the issue you have with eyewitnesses, especially reluctant eyewitnesses or uncooperative eyewitnesses. You can have someone, you know, go into a police station a year before the trial and give this wonderful, beautiful statement that identifies the defendant, gives you a ton of evidence. But if you are just walking into trial relying on that witness to say the same exact thing they told the detective in the investigation, you're in a lot of trouble. You get in there and that witness refuses to testify at all. It's very difficult to make them testify. Some of these witnesses are serving time already, so what do they care about being held in contempt of court? And then jeopardy's attached, and now you're kind of SOL. And so a lot of the cases we tried, they don't have any witnesses. The one I tried last week and the one Mr. Williams tried, well, the one last week, we didn't have a single witness. It also, ironically, happened on Christmas Day. It was a murder happens on an RTCC camera in front of a grocery store. So we had the video from the grocery store. We had video from real-time crime camera at the scene. We had video from LPR cameras in Jefferson Parish. We had video from different points in time of that vehicle moving throughout the city. And that's how the case was made, you know, from surveillance video alone.
Tucker also asked about what effect the DNA testing issue is having on juries.
Matt, I guess this is your area. Let's talk about what kind of effect it's having, and what are the jury's expectations, and how does this affect murder trials?
I'd like to start off. Imagine watching CSI episode one, and you put it on, and you're 10 minutes into the episode, and all of a sudden it stops. Mm-hmm. And it says, to be continued, season 3, episode 7. And that's what we're seeing with this, you know, delay, you know, average delay of 441 days from the time it's submitted to the time we get a result. And so that really kind of stops the case. You don't want to present a case to a jury and say, oh, by the way, we have this incredible piece of evidence that is sitting at the lab, but we don't have a report yet.
Wait till you see this.
Yeah, wait till you see this, but they never get to see it. Man. And so I think it's unethical in many cases when you have something where it might not be on crystal clear quality video. You might not have a slam dunk type case in terms of making an identification. DNA is the best possible tool for making in identification. When you have a witness that comes in and says, I'm 100% certain that that's the person I saw holding the gun, it's a lot different when you have a lab expert coming in and saying, look, we swabbed that gun, we swabbed the defendant for a reference sample, and there's a 1 in 16 nonillion chance it's somebody else. And so that evidence is extremely independent and it's extremely strong.
I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but with the discovery process, if they know whether or not you have the DNA, if it's good for them or if it's bad for them, and they know you don't have it, they're going to be a lot less likely to take any kind of plea than if they know that you have it and it's bad for them.
Spot on, Tommy. I was a defense attorney before I was a council member, before I was a DA, and no defense attorney worth their salt is going to and life means life in the state of Louisiana. You get convicted, you stay in jail till you get carried out in a pine box, and the jury's going to hear that, and the defense is going to say it over and over again. No defense attorney worth their salt is going to move forward with that big unknown being there. I haven't seen a single judge that was willing to go forward with a case knowing that there's no answers on that testing. I've even seen judges...
Wait, that it's pending?
That it's pending. No judge is going to go forward with a trial with DNA testing pending, knowing full well that case may wind up back in their lap because of how it comes out down the road. I've even seen judges call in members from Louisiana State Police to explain when they thought they would be able to get to the testing, to explain the delays, because I just didn't quite understand why it was delayed so much. And, you know, this is really hard on survivors and next of kin and victims' families. They don't deserve this. They don't understand it. They assume that because it was collected, it would be tested immediately. And so it really does change the trajectory of these cases, and it puts them in a holding pattern that no one can get them out of. And to your first question, if we had immediate DNA test results, you'd see a lot more pleas of guilty, where folks are saying, look, I'm just going to take my lick here because I see you've got proof that I was present at a scene where I originally said I wasn't at. And so a lot more cases would be resolved very early on because of that early testing.
Juries are more likely to believe DNA than they are video or witness statements?
DNA is well established. It's like a fingerprint these days. If there are no issues with the custody and how that was preserved, they believe that DNA and fingerprints are a lot stronger than somebody's memory.
Because I was going to say, just as it would have raised the bar with the crime shows, I would think that it also kind of closes the door once you can prove that you have it, right?
Absolutely. 100%.
So what has taken so long to get the stuff tested?
Well, it's just the volume of test submissions that are going to the state police now. It's not just Orleans Parish. It's several parishes that are sending all of their collections for testing. And we're just waiting in a queue for them to get to us. They've actually limited the number of test submissions that can come from Orleans Parish. We can only do it for certain cases. DNA can be very helpful in burglary cases, car burglary, home burglary, all sorts of cases. But
that is way at the bottom.
It's way down at the bottom of the list in terms of priorities for the state police. And that number only grew when you think about the amount of time that we haven't had local testing. And we're a port city. We've got people coming in town from other parishes every single weekend. Crimes are committed. So there are a number of collections coming from Orleans Parish, and we have to have our own local testing. There's no way for us to get around that.
Are murder and rape at the top of the list?
Absolutely.
Where does time factor in this, not just in terms of prosecution, but in terms of preservation of DNA, or is that a factor?
You know, the science of collecting and preserving submissions has gotten better than it's ever gotten before. It used to be you only had a couple of shots because the submission would sometimes be destroyed when it was being tested. So that's gotten a lot better. The science has gotten a lot better. But the volume issue is the one that is hurting not just this parish, but parishes around the state.
How do we compare the nation when it comes to this kind of thing?
We're behind. We're behind. There is really no excuse for a major destination city, a port city like ours, to have gone since 2005 without its own testing capabilities. If we invested in this space, we would not only be able to do our own test submissions, but we could probably start doing them for surrounding parishes as well. And actually, that would be a revenue generating aspect for the city of New Orleans. And being in the middle of a budget crisis, anything that generates you revenue matters. So we're way behind cities like ours.
DNA collection and testing aren't just local issues. Per the FBI, reducing the DNA backlog is a goal, and the DNA Capacity Enhancement for Backlog Reduction Program, or the CEBR program, was working on increasing the capacity of publicly funded forensic DNA and DNA database laboratories to process more samples as of last summer. A group called End the Backlog also advocates for improvements regarding the handling of rape kit evidence. You can read about that effort at endthebacklog.org. Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WWJ News Radio in Detroit, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, and the Tommy Tucker Show out of WWL Radio in New Orleans. You can find these roundups by subscribing to On Deadline, Who Killed Strawberry, or Bitter Academia on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.